This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Above the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information about a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
34,000 pounds of ground beef is recalled for possible E. coli. Minimum wage is going up, and the Oregon Aquarium rescues a sea otter.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this. This is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor. Happy New Year. Almost.
Almost. We're in anticipation.
It's New Year's Eve, Friday, December 31st, and this is absolutely everything you need to know right here. About to tell you. A company based in California is recalling 34,373 pounds of organic ground beef products because they may be contaminated with E. coli bacteria. First Class Foods Incorporated of Hawthorne, California.
The now ironically named First Class Foods.
Yes. Says company sampling yielded a positive result for E. coli. The affected packages were produced on December 7th and 16th. They were shipped to stores in California, New Jersey, New York, North Carolina, Wisconsin, and Washington State.
E. coli. I'm sorry. I always have the urge to do that.
You always have to do that.
I don't know why. It's just a thing that's in my head.
And I always have this thing where I go, E. coli, where the wind comes sweeping out the plane.
So. It's almost hard to believe we're not professional jingle writers.
The packages have an establishment number, EST.18895. There have been no reports of illnesses associated with the products. If you have any inquiries, please direct your questions to First Class Foods at 310-676-2500.
I'm sure there's nothing they'd like more than to hear from customers right now. In fact, just call them and just to chat. Just call them and ask them how things are. Just see how things are going.
A 38-year-old Orlando, Florida man who fell down while running to catch a bus was killed late Thursday night when he was struck by a vehicle. The vehicle, by the way, the bus. Alan Matos Dotel was killed in the crash, which occurred about 10:15 p.m. at West Oak Ridge Road and Texas Avenue in Orange County, Florida. According to the Florida Highway Patrol, the Lynx bus was stopped near the shoulder of the road just east of the intersection at a bus stop, and it began to drive off. A witness who had just exited the bus said the man was running to catch the bus, but slipped and fell in front of it. The right rear of the Lynx bus struck the man, who was taken to the hospital and pronounced dead. The crash remains under investigation. but charges are not expected.
It does seem like falling in front of a bus is sort of that brings the story's investigation to an abrupt and, I would say, complete conclusion.
There's not a lot to investigate there.
No.
It's like, how did this happen? He fell down. The bus ran over him.
I was actually just going to say, also like in the intro to the story, had they not even tried to put a finer point on it, they just say literally, he was running and fell down. End. Right. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia. Is that your new eye bottle opener?
It is indeed.
Okay. All right.
It's a phone and a bottle opener.
Speaking of bottle opener, so was it you noting that the funemploymentradio.com guys have gone through an entire bottle of Pendleton's whiskey in...
The big bottle of Pendleton whiskey, by the way. Because I was actually going to just swipe a shot of it right now to go with my morning coffee. And which morning being relative since it's noon, but
also hello to everybody who has a real job.
Yes, but yeah, I was like, because it's a huge bottle. I received a gift of one, and they received a gift of one. Mine is sitting on the coffee table at my home with basically one drink missing from it. We got it the day before Christmas.
Yeah, we got it 8 days ago.
And then they were gone for Christmas, so they got it on Monday.
So they've been here, and they're not in the day. So they've really only been here for 4 days.
And I swear to God, yesterday it was still half full.
Okay. It's good to be alive.
So I was like, Pendleton, oh, no, never mind. It's all gone.
So this is going to be another one of those days where you are, and it's a relative lament, but where the complaint is that you are not able to drink alcohol at your job in the middle of the day.
I could if I chose to. There's still about a third of a bottle of rum over there.
Sorry. You're
there's creme de menthe.
Not able to drink the alcohol of your choice.
While at work.
At work during the middle of the day.
Yes.
Times is hard.
It's good to be the boss.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us today. It is Friday, December 31st, 2010, New Year's Eve. Coming up later on this hour, we have your entertainment news, also science on the march. If you want to get this program later on via iTunes, it's going to be there. It's also available as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. You can also get it on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Dawn Taylor.
The Arizona legislature is expected to take up another controversial immigration bill in its upcoming session. Senate President-elect Russell Pierce wants to prevent children born in the U.S. to illegal immigrants from being recognized as citizens under the 14th Amendment. Pierce says Arizona will do something about illegal immigration if Washington won't.
We've waited for the federal government to do something for years and years and years. How long are you going to wait on the federal government? You can't afford to wait on the federal government. I've never seen such cheap drive-by political statements than I have from Washington to D.C.
You would think that they would at least have some special class where they would teach guys it's not pronounced gummit.
Gummit.
You know?
American. They also say American, usually.
One of those tells you think they try to breed out of people at some point.
I think it's actually fitting, though, because guys who say gummit are pretty much always the same guys who want to do things like disallow people who are born here from being citizens.
Never mind the pesky Constitution, which actually grants them that citizenship.
Right.
That's okay.
Pierce gives more explanation.
We have a path to citizenship, and it's not breaking into the... We have a path to citizenship, and it's not breaking into the country. The 14th Amendment was never...
Breaking into the country out of your mother's vagina. Quick, the light of freedom, Jimmy! Run for it!
We have a path to citizenship, and it's not breaking into the country. The 14th Amendment was never intended to be used the way it's used.
Okay.
I'm hearing the theme from The Great Escape in my head now.
Seriously, it's Chicken Run or something. You know, out of your mother's insides into the to the harsh light of the American liberty.
Oh, those fetuses with their crafty plans to break into our country.
I mean, it's what everybody. Here's the thing: it's like whatever anybody wants to say about the problem of immigration, legal or otherwise. You know, these are the guys that, like the new GOP, they started their whole thing they have this whole plan of reading the Constitution out loud on the floor of Congress. That's how they're going to ring in the new Congress, is they're going to read the Constitution top to bottom, because that's the law by which our country got to operate.
Mm-hmm.
The Constitution, which is, as I think he himself notes in the statement, what grants citizenship.
Yeah.
I mean, the path to citizenship is, among other things, being born here. So it seems like you're either going to follow the book or not. I mean, I'm just,
Yeah, it's sort of like people who selectively read the Bible.
Yeah.
It's like when it comes to gun control, they stand on the Second Amendment. And it's like, it's a Constitution. How dare you be unpatriotic? And the Constitution says I have the right to bear arms. And then, but it's like, that 14th Amendment, we don't like that one.
Yeah.
We're not fond of that one. So
even,
that's the government being wrong.
They don't even read the entire Second Amendment. Just that frustrates me with those guys. They always ignore the part that says well-regulated. You know?
Yeah.
You know, apparently it's that's not in their version. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
A grand jury has determined that a fatal shooting in Portland on December 17th...
December.
...was justified. Daryl Dwayne Ferguson died of multiple gunshot wounds to the chest and abdomen from shots fired by officers Jonathan Kizar and Kelly Jensen. A hearing will be held on January 4th on whether to release the transcripts of the grand jury proceedings. If granted, they could become available by January 7th. Police had responded to the address on East Burnside, first on reports of a dispute between neighbors at the apartment complex. They cleared the scene about 20 minutes after they arrived. About a half hour later, someone called 911 and said a man armed with a handgun was threatening to kill him. Officers returned to the scene. Gunfire broke out when they spotted Ferguson holding a weapon. Ferguson disappeared from view and officers evacuated the area as CERT officers arrived as backup. He was then found dead of gunshot wounds.
Now, is this the guy... I'm getting all these stories confused. Just the guy that was at his sister's house, and he was carrying something that they... But it sounds like this guy did have a gun.
No, he was carrying a replica gun. So it turned out that he didn't have an actual functioning
This guy
gun.
Here had a replica gun.
Right, Ferguson.
Okay. But was he over, like, a relative's house, or he was, like, at the... He was with his sister or his sister-in-law?
I'm not sure. It doesn't say here specifically.
Because we went through this whole spate. It was sort of a golden era for Portland police shootings.
Yes.
You know, there was like, I don't know, it was like 3-4 of these that happened in the, I don't know, the span of like 6 months or so. Anyway, so the...
Well, this apparently was just like a week or so ago. This was on December 17th.
But the court issued a whole... You know what it is? This is sort of like an every bite of the apple brings diminishing returns thing. The first people who file a lawsuit against the city because one of their deadbeat relatives got shot by the cops, they get like $3 million. But then it's like there's just less for every subsequent lawsuit. So the chances of the city just bothering to pay it out, it seems like there's probably... It seems like your chances of having the court find in your favor are less and less mm-hmm. with every, you know, with every month that goes by because there's just no money left to pay anybody out. And so the court just issues a thing saying, in not so many words, like, you know, he was asking for it, which is sort of what seems to have happened here.
So what you need to do is you need to move to a city where there are relatively few police shootings.
Or just do it early in the fiscal year.
And just be like the first guy
who
gets shot.
So really, if you're angling to get some money from the city, I would say
like mid-March, I guess. Yeah.
Really, you know, once mid-March or, you know, like April 16th rolls around, you know, everything kind of goes, the odometer rolls back to zero money-wise. So I would just say save your gunplay until then. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. I forgot to ask you how ham-fisted radio went on Friday.
It went fine.
Or on Wednesday, rather.
It was fun. We talked about movies. Eric D. Snyder joined Mr. Fatboy Roberts and I. We talked about our favorite films of 2010. And we also talked a little bit about the movies, because this is something that I actually found a little more interesting. Movies we didn't really expect much of, but that turned out to be really good and that surprised
Piranha.
Us. Piranha. I completely actually even forgot about Piranha.
Yeah.
But there was some, like Despicable Me, the animated
which
film.
Which I never saw.
Was much better than I expected it to be. A little movie. I don't know what kind of a release it's gotten yet. Rabbit Hole with Nicole Kidman and Aaron Eckhart.
The dead kid.
Right. And it's directed by John Cameron. The Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Right. Yeah.
And it just seemed like, it's... Parents, their marriage kind of being a mess after the death of their child, which sounds like it would just be like one of those, you know, award bait, tearjerker, just pounding you over the head with sorrow movies. And it's really not. It's really just incredibly interesting and well crafted, and just never rings false or overly sappy in any way. And that was actually one of the biggest surprises for me. So,
by the way, I just here's the reason I ask about that is because I thought that Eric D. Snyder was the one who had been on your show Wednesday, which by the way you can hear at hamfistedradio.com, because the movie BS with Baron Snyder airs directly before this show, does it not? From 11 till today?
Yeah.
So it would have been it was the thing that was just on before us today.
Right.
So I come in and I'm looking in the text box, and there's just some lingering message that says in all caps, "You are willfully disregarding the point I made about Tangled." Like it was really angry. It was just like somebody was really, they were just apoplectic with rage about, I'm presuming Eric's, it's like his deliberate overlooking of whatever, you know, subtle point they were trying to make about the
film. People take their Disney princesses very seriously.
Yes.
You
are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Here is Don Taylor.
New York's mayor is promising a full investigation into whether sanitation workers were told by supervisors to slow down snow removal efforts following the blizzard to protest budget cuts. Someone's phone is ringing.
I'm sorry, that's me. I did not silence my phone before the feature. Let's just pretend that's not happening.
City Councilman Daniel Halloran says he spoke with some of those workers making the claims.
The sanitation workers said that as they reported in for work, their supervisors told them, hey, listen, you know, we're not going to be on top of you like usual. Don't worry if you miss a couple of streets. Don't go out there and push too hard. We're not going to be watching. The city doesn't care about us, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, don't bother working hard. Don't help people.
I mean, if you feel like it, you know.
Yeah.
Don't go out of your way.
Halloran continues.
I don't believe the officers' union or the sanitation workers' union said go out and do this. I think some supervisors in some houses, some of these garages, wanted to send a message to the mayor.
So what was the... I'm missing this. So what was the message that they were presumably sending? Sort of
They want more money, you know, and so the sanitation workers basically deliberately slowed down the cleanup.
Well, here's the thing. If you screw the city bad enough, you're not going to have a mayor next time around who's, you know... If you screw Bloomberg bad enough that he's not in office, it doesn't seem like he's really going to be able to accomplish what you're wanting from him. Unless the whole theory is that they just, you know, is that they, it doesn't matter who gets into office next. They just got to send the message now.
Yeah, it's you know, it's the classic gambit, though. It's like, you know, the trash guys want more money, so they're going to stop picking up the trash. And then when they start realizing, hey, look how much trash is, like, piling up. I guess we should give them their 50 cents an hour.
All right.
An injured sea otter found on an Alaska beach was rescued and rehabilitated at the Oregon Coast Aquarium. Mojo became an official member of the sea otter exhibit on Thursday. Officials at the aquarium said Mojo was found in Homer, Alaska in October. Mammalologists discovered he had a broken jaw and several lacerations.
Mammalologists?
Mammalologists.
Okay, you're not making that up.
No.
You swear to God it says that.
Actually, it's mammalogists.
Mammalogists.
I think it
is.
Mammalogists.
Okay.
He was about 6 months old at the time and deemed unsuitable for release into his natural habitat. Rescuers believed that Mojo had been hit by a boat due to the nature of his injuries. He was quarantined for 2 weeks, then introduced with supervision to the other otters in the exhibit. He took about 2 months to heal, requiring constant attention. But he swam into his new home in the exhibit on Thursday, taking time to play briefly with one of the older resident otters. He's now about 8 months old and weighs 35 pounds.
Sea otters are one of those things that I can never tell apart from any number of other animals. You know, it's like it's like the whole thing of, like, seals and there's something else. What is it? There's a seal and there's something else that's like a seal.
There's walruses and seals.
Walruses and seals.
And sea lions and seals
there's
are similar.
There's sea lions as well.
Yeah, sea lions and seals are very similar. Otters and seals are not alike at all, really.
There's an otter looks like something else, though, doesn't it?
Well, it looks kind of like a weasel that swims. There's also the sea otters are bigger than freshwater otters. There are freshwater otters that are smaller.
There's what?
Freshwater otters.
Uh-huh. Okay, you're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program will be gracing your ear holes, courtesy of RickEmersonShow.com. Today, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio. We'll do another installment of Humor Meet Comedy 101, the year-end installment for New Year's Eve 2010. I'll be talking about the life and legacy of Mr. George Carlin. We'll also have another installment of Pop Culture Authority and a top five. Here is Don Taylor.
Opponents of the Park 51 Mosque in Manhattan are boycotting tween pop star Justin Bieber over an interview in which the singer purportedly voices his support for a controversial mosque.
This is awesome. So this story is completely fantastic. Now, do you know why?
Because it's not true.
Because it's totally fabricated. Because it's complete crap.
Yes. Led by a New York construction worker, Andy Sullivan, more than 500 people have joined a Facebook group condemning the singer for his remarks to Tiger Beat, in which he's quoted as saying, "Muslims should be allowed to build a mosque anywhere they want. Coming from Canada, I'm not used to this level of tolerance, eh?" Bieber then supposedly added that Muslims are super cool, Christians are lame-o-rama, and that the mosque will help start a dialogue with all religions about which Justin Bieber song is the most awesome.
By the way, can't you just see that being on the front of the Tiger Beat magazine, like in a starburst sort of, you know?
Christians are lame-o-rama.
Bieber says Muslims are super cool.
Sensing that something was afoot, Salon's Justin Elliott went in search of the interview, which he didn't find anywhere. Instead, he traced the comments to a post on the website celebjihad.com, a satirical website containing published rumors, speculation, assumptions, opinions, fiction, as well as factual information. When reached for comment, the site's proprietor confirmed the post was a joke and told Elliot that the fact that some people took it seriously is hilariously depressing.
JB gives his top five ways to be pious.
Muslims are super cool, says Justin Bieber.
This is sort of a, it seems like we have to have something, you know, for nutcase Christians to do now that they're no longer filing, you know, finding onion stories to take seriously about Harry Potter. About, you know, witchcraft craze among grade schoolers.
By the way, I emailed you a link to an onion story this morning. Steve Jobs releasing the new iPhone that only the really cool can see.
Ah, here we go. Item from the onion for you. It says, Apple claims new iPhone only visible to most loyal of customers. That's awesome. Excellent.
Yes, it goes on to talk about his releasing it and holding his empty hands up and saying, look at this, and everyone cheering and saying, I can see it. I can see it. It's so beautiful.
It's genius. Coming up later on this hour, you have your entertainment news, also Science on the March. At the news desk, here is Don Taylor.
Two Wired magazine journalists have found themselves at the center of a fresh WikiLeaks controversy after refusing to release the chat logs between former hacker Adrian Lamo and Bradley Manning, the alleged leaker of the 250,000 Cablegate documents.
Andrew Lamo?
Yeah, or Lamo. I'm assuming it's pronounced Lamo.
Is his last name L-A-M-O?
Yes. And he probably gets very angry if you pronounce it Lamo.
Okay.
But that's how it's spelled. Wired claimed the WikiLeaks scoop last June when senior editor Kevin Polson, a longtime associate of Lamo's, acquired transcripts of chats between them in which Manning reportedly brags about having given data to WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. Since then, Wired has decided to publish only one quarter of the chats, angering critics who accuse them of withholding information crucial to Assange's arrest. Wired maintains that there is nothing newsworthy in the chat logs, but critics, namely Salon's Glenn Greenwald, who's launched a vitriolic campaign against them, snark that the magazine's unwillingness to share is what prompted the need for WikiLeaks in the first place. The chats Wired has, but is withholding, and about which they're refusing to comment, are newsworthy in the extreme, Greenwald said. Over the past month, Lamo has suggested that Assange helped facilitate the leaks, which, if true, could affect how he's prosecuted. Wired says it has no intention of changing its position. We have discussions in the newsroom at every major turn in the Manning case about whether it's now appropriate to publish the complete logs, Polson said, and so far we've concluded that it isn't.
This is great. Maybe there can be some East Side, West Coast, you know, a duel between Wired Magazine and Salon, like between Bad Boy and Death Row. Or sure, and they can dance and
yeah,
twirl.
And snap their fingers.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. It is Friday, New Year's Eve, at around 12:23 Pacific time. We got your Science on the March here in just a few. Coming up later on this hour, we got your entertainment news as well. The Rick Emerson Show comes up next hour, a little bit after 1 o'clock, following a brief musical interlude at Rick Emerson Show today. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Where it says snuff?
Yes.
So we have a wait a minute. I think we're on the same page. I think I understand. I think I'm picking up what you're laying down over there. I think you and I are on the same page celebrity-wise, but this is the snuff watch you're talking about someone who is known yet probably not nameable by most people?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
All right. Is it you talking about the whole...
Yes.
All right. There
yeah,
you go.
There you go.
Okay. Tell me I'm not in touch with my feminine side. Job Watch coming up next hour. Snuff Watch coming up next hour on the Rick Emerson Show. Mr. Big Jim Willig will be here, and we'll have another installment of... it's actually sort of strange. I'm unclear about whether... Here's the thing about the Rick Emerson Show today. I'm unclear about whether this segment is a pop culture authority or whether it's a greatest songs ever made. Because somebody actually asked me a question about a song that I already had kind of in the queue for greatest songs ever. So I'm not quite sure how to position that.
Well, are you going to play the entire song as part of the segment?
I figured I sort of had to regardless. I figured that even if I did it as a pop culture authority, I would do that segment, then, you know, I would wrap it up, and then we would just go to the song.
Well, then it just pretty much turns into a greatest songs ever.
All right. Well, so I'll credit the... So maybe I'll do a greatest songs ever, but I'll credit the listener for having the question.
Yes.
Sort of in the beginning
that's
of it.
That's very wise.
All right. So we'll call that a greatest songs ever made. So that's coming up next hour as well. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do our science.
Here's your science. On the March, coming to your town now, courtesy of Legion of News.
After a century of progress, the issues that medicine must tackle in the coming year aren't that different from the ones that faced doctors at the start of 1911, according to the observations of the medical journal The Lancet. The publication's lead editorial for January 1st uses a century-old lens to explore the question, how much really changes, by looking back to an editorial called The Promise of 1911. In the older editorial, The Lancet assessed progress to that point and the challenges ahead. In his 1911 editorial, Samuel Squire Sprigg, editor of The Lancet from 1909 to 1937.
Are you sure he doesn't write for McSweeney's instead?
Oh, that would be a great name, though, for that. He lauded advancements against rabies, diphtheria, and the plague. Prior to the turn of the century, the bacterium that caused the plague had been identified during a pandemic that began in China. The disease, which was blamed for the medieval Black Death, had returned to Europe in 1911 to be met by science armed with the knowledge of its mode of propagation and of the practical measures to prevent the extension of its ravages, according to the editorial. The specters of tuberculosis still loomed, however. It has seen the continued efforts of science bringing us nearer to that stage of knowledge at which mastery of the disease may be hoped for, Sprigg wrote. A century later, tuberculosis has still not yet vanished. In 2009, an estimated 1.7 million people worldwide died from TB, most of them in Africa, and drug-resistant strains have emerged. Plague, rabies, and diphtheria also remain fatal diseases, most often in developing parts of the world, according to the World Health Organization.
You know, here's the great thing about bubonic plague, is that, I mean, I wonder if the other sort of, if the other diseases are jealous of it because it's so singular that it actually just gets to be called the plague.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, isn't a plague, correct me if I'm wrong, is plague one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse?
I believe so.
Pestilence, famine, war, and plague. I think. But I might be wrong about that. I might be making that up. Pestilence, famine, and war are three of the four horsemen.
Yeah.
But what would the fourth one be if it's not plague? Pestilence, famine, war. It's cheating to look it up. See, that's the thing. It's
people who don't know how to merge onto the freeway.
I think it might be plague.
Snotty baristas.
It could possibly might be disease as opposed to plague. But that's a fine distinction that we're making.
Because pestilence is, you know, aphids and bugs and rats and stuff, right?
Yeah, I believe the pestilence is like when your crops are destroyed by nature, such as by grasshoppers and whatnot.
In Rabbit of Seville, it was not Rabbit of Seville of the anyway in the Warner Brothers take on Wagner, it was smog.
What's opera doc?
Yes, what's opera? Yes, there you go.
That, by the way, is this show in a nutshell that we were just talking about, something that actually kills millions of people worldwide and is considered one of modern medicine's biggest challenges as it regards to a historical advancement in medicine and technology and science and a centuries-long look back at human progress. And you and I immediately go to a Bugs Bunny cartoon to try to explain it all.
Yeah, it all comes back to Bugs Bunny, really. One problem that could easily appear unchanged from the 1911 editorial was the elucidation of the problem of cancer. Since then, science has shed light on some causes, including tobacco, viruses, exposure to ultraviolet radiation, and certain chemicals, and has developed more complex treatments. However, the disease itself remains an intractable problem. In 2006, American men were diagnosed with cancer at a rate of 539 per 100,000 and 221 per 100,000 died, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control. So, go humanity.
I thought you were ending on some cheery, sort of upturn in the story.
No, basically it's just that, in 1911 they were really, really concerned about food safety.
Okay.
So not a whole lot has changed in 100 years.
Right. By the way, it's interesting if you go back and you read any sort of historical texts from that time where they talk about how at that point they believed that all of the breakthroughs in physics had been made, that really you were a foolish man if you decided to pursue physics as a career or as a course of study because there was just nothing left to be discovered. They'd found it all. And I mean, it was just sort of like as soon as they hit the turn of the century, they just figured that it had all been sussed. There was nothing left to learn.
By the way, last night I started listening to that Bill Bryson audiobook of At Home. And he's talking about the state of Britain, basically the world, but Britain in the mid 1800s. And wow, he's just fascinating, and he has a fascination with minutiae that is just awesome.
Is it being? Are you listening to the audiobook of it?
Yeah.
Is it the unabridged?
I think so.
Okay, well, you'll know because the abridged is essentially two discs or, you know, I don't know, 15 megs or something. The unabridged is 19 discs, I think, for most of his books.
Because it's really long. It is really long.
Yeah. So. Is it being read by him or by a British man at least?
By him.
Okay, really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's great because here's the thing is when I got the short history of nearly everything, the unabridged audiobook, because that was the only way I could get through that book. I couldn't make my brain work well enough to actually read the printed book all the way through because it was just so And it's the thing where he tries to speak down to you because you're a thick American, but it's like it's still too smart for me sometimes. So I was getting, alternating chapters. I would read a chapter, listen to a chapter, read a chapter, listen to a chapter. And then I did the whole book twice in a row, basically, to make sure that I could at least give it a fair shot of absorbing all of it. I actually took it back to the store the first time I bought it because it was some American guy reading it. And it just doesn't work with an American guy reading his text because it is so quinted. Even though he himself spent like half his life in America, he is so quintessentially British in the way he writes. You got to have it written by or read by a British guy, which just doesn't work.
Yeah, the first chapter alone, I've learned about like glass production and the heinous taxes that were placed on it in the early days. The broad history of vicars and rectors being like mathematicians and botanists and crazy geniuses.
Yeah.
And a whole thing about like the World Exposition of 1857.
He is fantastic.
Just in one chapter.
The Bill Bryson, for anybody who has not read any of his books, my assessment of him would be that it is very much as though you got Douglas Adams to write history or science texts for you. You know, like instead of whatever jackass wrote the book that you read in like seventh grade biology or something. Like if you would gotten Douglas Adams to write that, that's how his stuff reads. So if they had given me one of his books in school instead of the Houghton Mifflin thing they were having me read, I probably would have paid a lot more attention.
Just makes it really entertaining and really fascinating, and he manages to, it's like the TV show Connections, where he just like manages to jump from one thing to another thing and they're all interconnected, but then you realize that he's kind of straying far afield.
Yeah.
But it's still specific, and then he brings it back to his point, and it's just genius.
We, and by we I mean Cheryl, tried really hard to get him on the Rick Emerson Show when he came to town in November, I guess late October, early November, but it's like he was. I think he did like a brief thing with OPB, and that was about it. He wasn't really, because the thing was sold out like months before he ever got here. But the great thing about Bill Bryson, my final thought about him, is that he does something which is crucial. I mean, especially for younger people, if you're trying to get them interested, in things that they don't have any exposure to yet, is that he makes the zeal and appeal of learning palpable. I mean, that's a guy that really conveys just the joy of learning stuff if it's positioned in the right way.
Yeah.
So if you are a parent trying to whip your moronic kid into something approaching intellectual rigor, you could do worse than to set them down with a copy of a Bill Bryson book.
Or if you're an adult and you just are fascinated by interesting facts about the world around you. Anyway, the Food and Drug Administration on Thursday advised consumers not to buy or use two drinks sold as supplements for sexual enhancement. The products, Rock Hard Extreme.
Hold on.
And Rock Passion Hard. Coffee.
Extreme. Is that just with an X?
No, it's actually the word extreme.
All
they
right.
spelled it all out. Are sold on websites and possibly in retail outlets, the agency said. Laboratory analysis indicated that both contain sulfoaldenafil, an active pharmaceutical ingredient that is similar to sildenafil, an active ingredient in Viagra. Sulfoaldenafil could interact with prescription medications that include nitrates, the FDA warned, lowering blood pressure to dangerous levels. Nitrate-containing drugs are often prescribed for men with diabetes, high blood pressure, or heart disease. The warning arrives 2 weeks after a December 15th letter to dietary supplement manufacturers in which the FDA said it would crack down on illegal supplements.
Well, here's the thing. It sounds to me, now, I don't know anything about this. I don't know anything about the drink or about the drug or whatever, but I'm just based on the way that the article is written, the tone of the article is such that I instinctively believe that this product works. Because they're not saying, they're not saying it doesn't work. They're not saying, that they're just putting, like, ground-up chalk into capsules and selling it to gullible guys. They're just saying
they're saying it does the same thing that Viagra does, and like Viagra,
and it's contraindicated with other medications,
right,
which mean that it actually is effective.
Yes.
So that's interesting, because you just sort of see that stuff. It's like all that crap they sell at 7-Eleven next to the cash register.
Yeah.
Where it's, what is this? Well, it's night passion goat, formula, something or other. It's just vials of some mysterious thing that has like this silhouette of a woman on the front, and like a bare-chested man with a rose in his teeth. And you're supposed to take it, like an hour before you get together with that special someone. And you just assume that it's just a bunch of crap. This just sounds very much like it works, which means that it will be gone off the market like instantly.
Yeah, it seems that the FDA is trying to crack down on two different classes of dietary supplements that actually have stuff in them that do what they say they'll do. One is weight loss products, which have active ingredients like sibutramine, which is found in the drug Meridia. And Meridia was recently withdrawn from the market because of increased risk of heart attack and stroke. But, you know, it's got the similar stuff that Meridia had in it. The other two are bodybuilding products that contain anabolic steroids or steroid analogs, which can cause liver injury and increase the risk for heart attack, stroke, and death. And also sexual enhancement products like Rock Hard Extreme and Passion Coffee.
I seriously want to go buy some Rock Hard Extreme, like, right now today, just to see what it does, you know? Just to sort of, I mean, I guess maybe you don't have to look too far past the name to try to figure out what the selling point is, but I'd just be curious.
I'd be kind of curious, too, but then I might have...
But then it would be awkward.
It would be awkward.
Well, because you'd have to ask, right? You'd have to ask follow-up questions, and you would have to say, so did it work? And I'd say, did it ever? And then I wouldn't say anything. I'd just stare at you for a while.
Right.
See if you were going to ask, any sort of, secondary question.
And then I wouldn't want to, like, look, and I'd be happy that the laptop, kind of hides that portion of your
body. Okay, I wasn't even really thinking that.
We'd be in the room together, and that would be going on, and that would just be, And then I'd be wondering if you were telling the truth or not, but I wouldn't want to look.
Yes, because I'm 11 years old, and I'm incapable of standing up and walking to the blackboard without causing discomfort for everyone.
You are if you've...
If I've taken Rock Hard Extreme?
Yes.
Well, I could wear something baggy.
I think that just makes it worse, doesn't it?
For who?
Well, okay.
Here's Don Taylor.
A tornado fueled by an unusually warm winter air sliced through parts of northwestern Arkansas early on New Year's Eve, killing at least 3 people today, injuring several others, and knocking out power to thousands of homes and businesses. 3 people died in Cincinnati, a hamlet of about 100 residents 3 miles from the Oklahoma border. Washington County Sheriff's Dispatcher Josh Howerton said the storm touched down near the center of the community. He said, quote, lots of injuries, unquote, were reported. And officials in nearby Benton County said the storm injured 2 people and damaged 5 homes there. Several flights to and from the Northwest Arkansas Regional Airport were delayed or canceled Friday morning as they worked to clear storm debris littering the runway. The region's been bracing for severe weather for much of the week. Gulf moisture riding southerly winds pushed temperatures into the upper 60s and 70s on Thursday ahead of a cold front expected to drop temperatures into the teens on Saturday morning. Anytime you have a significant change in air mass there, like, hey, it's 70, hey, it's 10, it's going to be unsettled weather marking the 2 different air masses, said a meteorologist.
This is one of those things where Bill Bryson, who we really ought to be billing for all of the references that he's gotten on the show over the last, couple weeks, where he explained this. It's that thing where you're getting a dumbed-down version of the story, but at the same time, he's not pretending it's anything else. But he talked about the nature of wind and temperature and pressure systems as it relates to weather and hurricanes and storms. And he said, effectively, that the Earth is always trying to seek equilibrium. So whenever there are masses of hot air and masses of cool air, he said, effectively, you can think of the wind as always trying to rush around, sort of to balance everything out, because it wants to be at a sort of mean. Mm. And so it's constantly swirling about trying to get everything at one baseline temperature. And so when you have these wide fluctuations, just these huge variations in temperature, that is then what triggers, just sort of insane cyclonic winds. Sometimes because because the Earth is going, wait, no, over there. No, over there. No, it's cool. No, it's too hot over there. No, over there. No, it's got to try to get from like 70 degrees to 10 degrees instantly, and it can't. But in a rush to do so, it creates, these vacuums, and that's where the wind comes from. I also like the fact that he described it as just, what did he say, a lot of people?
Lots of injuries.
Lots of injuries.
That was his thing.
That's right between the...
So have many people... There's lots of injuries. Well, okay, I guess that's our quote.
That's right between a bunch of and a messa.
A whole messa injuries.
Are we... is that science?
That's all the science.
For the moment? All right, there you go.
Again, holiday weekends come along, and all of the news people just kind of disappear. So, the juicy news becomes scarce.
And also, if there was juicy news, it's sort of 6 of 1 of whether we'd be able to print it today. So we're having some sort of a strange issue with the printer.
Yeah.
Here's the thing: is like, why would it just be that one document though? Even after I changed it to something else and sent it to your laptop, I'm not disputing that. I'm just saying it's weird.
I'm telling you, if you look on your computer, you have it set to invisible.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you. You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. Today, we'll talk to Mr. Big Jim Willig. He'll be in the studio with Humor Me. We will also have a Snuff Watch, Job Watch, and another installment of The Greatest Songs Ever Made. That is all coming up after a brief musical interlude following the top of the hour changeover here at Cascadia.fm. You can hear that at Rick Emerson. .com or rickemersonshow.com. And here at Legion of News, we want to thank Squires Electric for being one of our proud business partners and for making this excursion into science and amusements of all varieties possible for you, the listener. You can find Squires Electric at squireselectric.com. I'm unclear about whether they're actually open at this very moment, although
no.
I suspect if you call. Now, I don't know this for sure. I should actually look into this. I suspect that if you were to call them right now, that they probably have one of those, like, if you've got an emergency, you know,
oh,
feel
sure
free to call,
do.
Whatever. Because, you know, the holidays are tend to be a big, it seems to be a busy time for them because everybody suddenly realizes that, that they've either, like, installed something in the house or they've got their, or that thing where you've got, like, three different heaters running in three different sections of your home, or you got one downstairs, or you got a whole bunch of things wired in that you were never using before, or people are thinking about springtime coming up around the corner, and springtime comes, maybe you're going to get your remodeling done, or a lot of times people go out and they will buy houses. They'll start to close on a house like in fall or winter with an eye towards revamping it, or they'll buy property with an eye towards actually building the home when spring comes. And of course,
or maybe somebody gives them a free gigantic TV and they've got to figure out how to mounted on their wall and hook everything up.
I was just going to say, or you've recently come into possession of a free gaudy bit of consumerism, and you got to figure out a way to mount it on the wall of your home so that you might sit and become become a great American, by which I mean someone who just sort of sits and looks at the, what is it, 60 inches?
Actually, it's only like 50.
It's only 50.
It's like 50 inches.
All right. Now, as far as the wiring goes, have you seen the TV yet?
No, I talked to Ms. Russell last night, and I'm going to have to get like some kind of adapter because I guess it's just older enough that the coax doesn't go like directly into the TV.
No, it's like a smart video.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to like get an adapter for the coax into the thing. But yeah, and... But no, and apparently I'm not going to have to mount it on the wall, even though it weighs a lot.
You've got a milk crate you can set it on?
Well, it comes. You can also put the little feet on the bottom of it, and then I have a large, long table that is the right size. So I actually will be able to put this without having to, mount brackets into my wall or drill into the apartment's
The other thing you can do is,
or something.
Instead of getting a table, you can just lay a door across some cinder blocks.
I could do that.
And then,
milk cartons.
Yeah.
Those plastic milk curtains. Those always look good.
If you damage the wall, just put up a Dark Side of the Moon poster.
Yes.
Here's the thing about those brackets. Aren't you always afraid that the brackets are fine, but that the plaster on the wall isn't strong enough and the television's just going to go and rip out of the wall?
Well, yeah, that's why you have to make sure you find where the studs are.
Yeah, and then they got the stud finding thing,
yeah.
which I never buy. Because I always tell myself, it always seems like it's going to be a one-time purchase. That's why I never buy one. So I've never purchased a stud finder because I always say, well, how often am I really going to use this? And, of course, the answer is, I mean, often enough that I should have just bought the damn thing by now. So instead of doing that ridiculous thing of wrapping a hammerhead in cloth and tapping along the wall as though I know what the hell I'm listening for, like I have any idea. You know, it's like I'm cracking a safe or something. I'm sort of like tapping the wall, then listening. Like I'm waiting for the wall itself to speak to me and tell me that I found the right place. So,
see, I have one of the stud finders because I bought, when I moved into this apartment, I bought one of those wall-mounted shelf units at IKEA. And then I got it home and discovered that it weighed like a lot more than I thought it did.
Yeah.
So I had to find where the actual studs were to put it up on the wall.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. The Rick Emerson Show next hour at rickemersonshow.com. This is Don Taylor.
We don't need the science music
anymore.
Are
we done? That's right. We're done with science.
Yeah.
There's your science for New Year's Eve. That is Friday, December 31st, 2010.
It will be a somewhat happier New Year for nearly 650,000 workers earning minimum wage. They're getting small raises in seven states that tie their salaries to the cost of living.
Does not apply to Emerson News Network.
January 1st, Oregon's minimum wage will increase to $8.50 an hour. And in Washington, it goes to $8.67 an hour, which is the highest in the nation. For Oregon, the increase is 10 cents an hour. It's the first increase in 2 years, and it's based on the index from August of 1 year to the next. Colorado is the only state where the index goes down, so that therefore does the minimum wage. Washington state law is slightly more complicated, and there's a challenge to the increase, but it was blocked by employment groups such as the National Employment Law Project based in New York. The minimum wages in those states will go up between 9 cents and 12 cents an hour on Saturday because their consumer price indexes rose in 2010.
So it's going to be what in Washington state?
In Washington, it's going to be $8.67.
Now, that's interesting because that is sort of – so the last minimum wage that I remember – in other words, the last time I was aware of the minimum wage in Washington was when I started working, which would have been when I was 15. And the minimum wage in Washington when I was 15, what was the minimum wage when you started working, when you got your first job?
Oh, God, I don't know. Like 25 cents an hour. I have no idea.
For me, it was $4.25. So it is, and I guess I'm not really sure what I'm supposed to draw from that, but it does, I mean, so it's more than doubled since I actually got my first job, which was, you know, a little over 20 years ago. So it makes me wonder if the prices of everything have doubled since then. It doesn't seem likely that they have.
The last time I was actually thinking, in a position to actually think about minimum wage was when I worked at Starbucks, because they would start you at like 25 cents an hour above the minimum wage. That was the lowest pay scale. And I was an assistant manager, and so I got a little bit more money than that. But the thing is, when while I was working there, the minimum wage went up, and everybody got a pay raise, because that's what they did at Starbucks, is they made sure that you were, you know, everybody was X above minimum wage.
See, here's the great thing about that, is that really, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, like the extra quarter an hour doesn't make all that much difference, but you know, but that is exactly the sort of thing that people really, really like about a company. Because it's just, you know, it is a symbolic gesture. But you know, the important thing about that is, here's the savvy thing about that. A, is it inspires, you know, and I'm not saying Starbucks is a bad company, because by all accounts, they are a fairly great place to work. I mean, you know, you've talked about working there. Sarah was, she was a Starbucks barista, and as she once said, you know, when people would bitch about Starbucks, her response was, "Yeah, they're a terrible company. What with the giving me health care for working 20 hours a week and all."
Yeah.
But the other great thing about paying all of your employees 25% above minimum wage is that no one can say it's a minimum wage job, and that no one who works there has to say that they work for minimum wage. So it actually works for both sides of the equation, because nobody can accuse Starbucks of just, well, it's a minimum wage occupation you're offering people. And it allows people who work there to not have to tell anyone else that they are working for minimum wage, which is just a thing that a lot of people do. But you don't really like to, you know, to say that. I mean, it's that sort of a shame thing for a lot of people.
That's one of the things that companies like Starbucks do really, really well. It was basically giving you that sort of psychological impression. We care about you a little bit.
Right.
You know, because there's that, the health insurance, even for part-time employees, and just stuff like, and you got a pound of coffee a week.
Right.
You know, stuff like that just sort of made you feel, okay, this job doesn't suck entirely.
Starbucks is a little bit like Apple in that regard, in that, you know, and again, I'm not saying it's a bad place to work, but I mean, let's be honest. If you work, just like if you work at Microsoft, you're working for, you know, an office supply company. If you work at Starbucks, you're working at a fast food restaurant. Yeah. You know, and I'm not saying that as a knock. The world needs fast food restaurants.
No, it really is only a rung or two above McDonald's.
But just like Apple computers, really, they just make big calculators. I mean, let's just, you know, and I love Apple, but come on. I mean, it's just, really, that's all it is. It's just a bigger version of, like, it's a bigger version of that thing you had in high school that would do, like, cosine stuff. It's just prettier. But by working at the Apple store, or by working at Apple, or even by purchasing Apple products, you sort of psychologically put yourself into this place that is rungs above, you know, your regular fast food outfit, just like it is with Apple. So, I mean, it's a neat little psychological trick that sort of works out well for everybody in the equation.
Oh, and you're not an employee, you're a partner.
Is that true? Is that what they say?
Yes. Yeah,
good for them.
Let's do our entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for New Year's Eve. That is Friday, December 31st, 2010.
American Idol host Ryan Seacrest told Good Morning America that he is not engaged to Julianne Hough, contrary to rumors. But he added that he's very happy with the actress /dancer.
Do you know that Mike Russell looks a little bit like Ryan Seacrest?
I don't know.
Ever so
that
slightly.
That never occurred to me.
If you were to take, here's the thing, if you were to take... let's see. If you were to take Ryan Seacrest and Seth MacFarlane,
okay, yeah,
and merge them into one person, it would be Mike Russell.
I could see that. I can see the Seth MacFarlane thing very much.
You know who else looks just like Seth MacFarlane? Our friend Siegfried.
Siegfried does.
Looks
just
like him. But if you were to add a little more Seacrest, you know, here's the thing that Mike Russell has. He has that Ryan Seacrest blinding white smile. He's got the perfect flawless teeth.
And the hair. His hair always is just right.
Is that his real hair?
Yeah, that's his real hair.
Because, you know, here's the thing about it. I mean, it looks good, but it almost looks too good. It's like Carl Klick's hair. It seems immobile.
That's his real hair.
Does he get his hair cut every week?
I don't know. His hair has always looked like that. Always. I've known him for 12 years now, and his hair has always been like that, and it's always been just, like, perfect.
He's like Archie Andrews. He's just got the one cross-hatched haircut that just stays there, like, forever.
Yes.
Because I've never seen him with his hair too long. I've never seen him with his hair shaggy, unkempt, in need of a cut, in need of a trim, in need of a style.
No.
I mean, I'm not saying it's a fancy haircut. It's not. But it's timeless, and it just seems to be exactly the same no matter when you see him.
Right.
You know, no matter what the conditions outside are, no matter where he's come from.
It's uncanny.
His hair is exactly the same. We should get him in here and just
talk to him about his hair.
Give his hair like a good once over.
Okay. All right. Do that. 90210 actress Shanae Grimes, I guess that's how you pronounce her name, Shanae, denies she's dating singer John Mayer.
Turned into my grandmother just there.
Apparently today is the people talking about the people that they're not actually going out with or something. According to Star Magazine, John Mayer and I are in secret sexy cahoots, she tweeted on Wednesday. How wonderful for me. If wonderful meant embarrassing.
Okay.
Rep for Mayer did not comment, but said that Star Magazine, quote, is not a credible source.
I think that, and I'm unclear about whether, well, let's stop. What, three things. One, I think secret and cahoots, you need one of those words. You don't need both in a sentence.
Secret, sexy cahoots.
Secondly, way to pwn John Mayer there real casually.
I know.
Third, I just assume by reading that, just the way she describes it, that she did shtup John Mayer, but now doesn't want to admit it because we all kind of have figured out he's a douche. Is that three? Fourth. No. Third. Fourth? We'll say fourth. Fourth, you know, I'm glad that the rest of the world has finally come around to thinking that the guy's just a big dick. Because I sort of sussed that out, like, from the beginning. I mean, I just sensed that he was just a colossal boob. And everybody kind of seemed blind to it for a while. Because he's the Your Body is a Wonderland guy, right?
Yes.
Yeah, F him. And I hated him from the beginning. But it was like he was just like nailing like one hot celebrity babe after another. And I couldn't understand why they didn't grasp what a dick he clearly was. And it seems like, I think we can thank the tag team of Jennifer Aniston and Taylor Swift for this. Of just sort of unmasking him as being like a colossal dork.
Well, isn't he the one that also, he kind of shot himself in the head with that whole... My penis isn't a Benetton ad kind of thing. He said, my penis is a Nazi. Was that John Mayer?
No idea what you're talking about right now.
Oh, I believe it was John Mayer. He gave some kind of he was doing an interview, and he was talking basically about how he only is sexually attracted to white women. And then he said something about, like, you know, in his heart, he wishes that he could be like a big Benetton ad. But he said, but unfortunately, my penis is a Nazi.
Okay, see, that's actually kind of great. I mean, if he actually said that, then I guess I'll have to adjust my opinion ever so slightly, because that's funny.
It is kind of funny, except that people got really mad at him for saying that his penis was a Nazi.
Well, that's their fault. Because then I'm hearing that my penis is a Nazi, like, to the tune of Your Body is a Wonderland. But I think that he was on either Twitter or Stern or possibly both, maybe one related to the other, and he was talking about... I get all the celebrity douchebags confused. Wasn't John Mayer the guy who was twittering all of, like, the really not explicit, but a lot of ungentlemanly things about his relationship with Jennifer Aniston?
Yeah.
And that was insane.
And that apparently was part of the reason she broke it off with him, was because of his apparent inability to cut it back on the Twitter.
Because he was just an ass. Anyway, so I'm glad that everybody's sort of on the same page. Last but not least, wait. No, I guess that must be it. So, I mean, I think I'm at the end of my observations there. But I just sort of assume that she has banged him, but now sees that that was a mistake, and has opted not to.
I'm good with it either way. Yeah. I kind of just like the idea of it just being, hey, somebody says I'm seeing John Mayer.
Sucks for me.
How embarrassing that is. No. You know, so.
I wonder if you're John Mayer and you get up and you just check your Twitter in the morning and you see something like that. Like, if you reach a point where it doesn't even faze you. Like, if someone is broadcasting on Twitter... The fact that you may or may not be dating and then it blows, you know?
I don't know.
All right. Here's Don Taylor.
He doesn't strike me as somebody who does a lot of
introspection.
Introspection.
Yeah.
Octomom Nadia Suleiman and her 14 children could be saved from eviction by the adult film company Vivid Entertainment. She apparently supposedly hasn't paid the $450,000 she owes the guy who owns the mortgage on her house. He says he's going to evict her. The balloon payment was due October 9th, but Haddaden says he's now considering an offer from Vivid Entertainment co-founder Steve Hirsch to pay the money owed. Suleiman has declined offers from Vivid of as much as $1 million to appear in porn videos. I'm open to any option that allows me to finish with this matter, Haddaden said. He plans to meet with his lawyer on Monday to talk about a deal with Steve Hirsch, which means that Suleiman won't face eviction on Friday. Hirsch says he's not trying to pressure Suleiman into porn, but he would use her mortgage problems to start a conversation that brings her to work for Vivid.
Okay. Here's the thing that I don't... By the way, somebody has clarified this. Now, I don't know if this is the actual quote or if they are just paraphrasing, but I choose to believe this is the actual quote. Mm-hmm. My penis... Apparently, he said his penis was racist because it won't stand up for the Nubian princess.
There we go, yeah.
So I just like the word Nubian being used in there.
Yes.
John Mayer. Also, several people, independent of one another, I believe, have suggested that Penis Nazi is a great name for a metal band. So somebody wants to put together that group. I wonder this about the Vivid Entertainment thing, because Vivid is sort of like Golden... They're like that GoldenPalace.com place where they're always... You know, except GoldenPalace.com is sort of a shtick that they're always bidding on strange celebrity items and then branding it with their logo and putting it, you know, somewhere. The thing about Vivid is that Vivid is obviously, well, you know, from L.A., you know, Vivid is they're a huge company.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a huge company with, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of revenues every year, which doesn't even seem possible because I can't really fathom who is going and paying $39 for a porn DVD at this point. But they always do this where somebody will get into the news and then Vivid will offer them. I think Vivid, they're the ones who employed, what's her name, Lawrence Fishburne's daughter.
Yeah, I think so.
Whatever the hell her name was. So, you know, that's their thing is when they see somebody who's in the news or somebody who's a celebrity, I think it was the Vanessa Hudgens. They when she turned 18 or whatever, they like floated some huge offer that they would give her like $10 million to come bang it out on film. And you always got to wonder, like at some point that's just not going to pay itself off because
Someone might take them up on it for one thing.
Yeah, and then you got to face the reality that no one wants to see the Octomom like ever under any, much less uncovered and having sex. I mean, there's not enough money in the world for that. I mean, I can't imagine the target demo for that. I mean, now there's pregnant porn, but she's not even pregnant at this point.
No, it's just cavernous vagina porn.
Okay. Yes, there's that too.
Real Housewives of Beverly Hills star Camille Grammer believes she will receive up to $50 million in her divorce settlement from Kelsey Grammer, according to the New York Post. Camille reportedly turned down a $30 million offer because Kelsey Grammer was not offering child support or alimony in the deal. She's a partner in the TV company and entitled to half the money he made from his shows, including Frasier, where they were married, says her lawyer.
Okay.
That's all the entertainment.
All right. We'll just...
She turned down $30 million because child support wasn't included.
He's a cheapskate. Isn't he the guy? Wasn't Kelsey Grammer the one who... I always confuse him with John Larroquette for some reason, which is strange because they're nothing alike.
No.
But in my head, they just morph together. But Kelsey Grammer was the one where some years ago, he was... Like, he rolled his car or something on the highway, and there was a youngish girl in the car with him, and they found a bunch of blow, like, in the backseat.
Yeah,
or am I just...
I think that was him.
So that's a thing, or is that just a thing that I'm making up because it seems like the sort of thing that might happen to him?
Well, I know that he did actually do some time for cocaine possession at some point. I think that's how that happened.
All right. Yeah. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson Show at rickemersonshow.com. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Also, Greatest Songs Ever Made, Snuff Watch, and Job Watch. Here is Don Taylor.
Florida may have pardoned Jim Morrison for indecent exposure earlier this month, but retroactive clemency won't be taking place in New Mexico, where Governor Bill Richardson decided not to pardon Wild West outlaw Billy the Kid for a string of frontier killings. Billy, who was 21 at the time, was shot to death by Sheriff Pat Garrett after escaping from a New Mexico jail while awaiting hanging. This fall, the kid reappeared in the media after an Albuquerque attorney filed a petition on his behalf, claiming territorial Governor Lew Wallace had promised to pardon Billy in exchange for his testimony. Wallace's and Garrett's descendants hotly disputed this version of events, and public opinion has been split. Today, a verdict was issued. On his last day in office, Governor Bill Richardson told ABC's Good Morning America that while the controversy has been good publicity for New Mexico, the historical record was too unclear to permit a pardon. That's how he spent his last day in office.
Well, you know, I guess as opposed to pretending that he was doing something worthwhile and meaningful, you know, just embrace the absurdity.
It's kind of like that last day before vacation thing where everybody's just like playing solitaire on the computer and ordering in pizza.
It's like you've passed your finals and you're just sitting there playing hangman with the teacher. Well, we should just end things now. It is New Year's Eve. It is Friday, December 31st, 2010.
I'm doing nothing, by the way. No one has invited me anywhere. I'm not going anywhere.
Me either.
I'm not doing anything.
Excellent. Good for you. See, normally, here's the thing. Is that now, are you happy about that?
I'm kind of okay with that. But I have to admit that every year when something like this happens, I think, how come no one ever invites me
What's
to do anything?
Me?
Why am I so unpopular?
Why don't people issue social invitations that I can ignore?
I got one invitation that was like from somebody who wants me to go see their Bowie cover band.
Yeah, well, that was a listener of ours.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, if somebody did invite you to something, you wouldn't go anyway.
I might. If it was somebody I liked and they were having, like, an actual party, I might go.
I know. You can, look, there's no need to traffic in lies here. You can be honest. You just want to be invited even though you don't want to go. You want to be invited just so you can know that you are loved.
Well, there is.
And they'll say, no, I'm so busy, I couldn't possibly.
There is a little bit of that, yes.
You haven't seen my dance card. No, it's insane. All right. So on behalf of everybody here at the Emerson News Network and everybody at Cascadia.fm, to all y'all, thank you for listening. And thank you for being here for the last, June, July, August, September, October, November, December, 7 months. Mm-hmm. So 7 months, give or take, of 2010. We will see you again on Monday, January 3rd, 2011. So have a safe weekend. This brings to the conclusion another installment of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk, Dawn Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer, Bruce Agler, chief of staff, Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemersonshow.com. Have a safe New Year's and a great weekend. We'll see you Monday. Thanks for listening. Bye.